Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
Are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, Will T, and Ray Jeezy, man. Last week was a hitter, man. You had an X pass. Will and I talked about it last show. We didn't talk about him passing. You know, we had our prayers up for him because it was like a grave. You know, it looked like he was in grave condition, but we were hoping that he would pull through. But X couldn't do it. Will T, man, you were there last week, man. When you heard the news, your thoughts?
I was saddened. You know, it was one of those things that, like you previously stated, that, you know, you thought, I know I can only speak for myself, and probably you know, we thought he was going to pull through, going to overcome the overdose, or whatever it was allegedly that placed him into the, you know, coma or with the lack of brain activity. So I'm sad to see him gone. But the one thing we do get, one thing we can still do is we can celebrate his life when they do have his send off.
Yeah, definitely. And I forgot to mention, again, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media, again, part of Empire Media. Ray, you were in the building, but when you heard the initial news, what did you think, my man?
Well, obviously,
Robert Jones.
It's unfortunate when anyone loses their life, and it's unfortunate that we don't always celebrate people while they're alive. Mm. This saying is going around now, it's trending, let's give people their flowers while they're still alive. I want to say Steven Jackson started that on a podcast that's not better than ours. But what's crazy is, what I appreciate about X, and I'll say this real quick, is that when you think about the greatest hip-hop artists that were also actors, Ice Cube, Tupac, Belly is in that discussion with some of the great movies that were produced by some of these awesome hip-hop artists slash actors and directors. And I mean, of course, Ice Cube and Tupac are like the standards, and I'm sure there's others, LL comes to mind, but DMX and that one movie, it's in the discussion for me.
Facts, man, facts. Again, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene on Empire Media. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kahn Report, hosted by Washington football team insider John Kahn, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can also subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition of pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk with Norfolk State men's basketball coach Robert Jones. At 8:33, we'll talk about a report that the Washington football team will be targeting North Dakota State quarterback Trey Lance in the NFL draft. Finally, we'll talk about the Nats' slow start of the season. But Ray, my man.
It's that time. this brother that I'm introducing tonight was born and raised in Queens, New York, and his basketball resume dates back to 2001, where our guest would land his first coaching gig, serving as an assistant for Division III Bard College. Subsequently, he would, for the next 2 years, hold the same position of assistant coach at his alma mater, the State University of New York at New Paltz. As a member of New Paltz's hoop squad from 1997 to 2001, our guest was a Division III honorable mention All-American and finished his playing career ranked ninth all-time in school history in scoring and number one all-time in blocks. During his coaching tenure at New Paltz, this individual helped guide his team to an appearance in the State University of New York Athletic Conference Championship game in 2003. This turned out to be just the start of an amazing coaching journey that led our guest being hired as head freshman team coach and assistant varsity coach at St. Mary's High School in Manhasset, New York in 2004. That season, the varsity team went 25-1 and finished the season ranked 10th nationally by USA Today. Our guest was instrumental in mentoring four future Division I prospects, including University of North Carolina graduate and 2009 Cleveland Cavaliers draftee Danny Green and former West Virginia University star and 2010 Los Angeles Lakers draftee Devin Ebanks. And between stints as a high school and AAU coach, 13 of our guest players went on to earn D1 scholarships. This success will catapult this individual to landing an assistant coaching job at Norfolk State University in 2007. And within his first four seasons at Norfolk State, he would earn their first MEAC tournament championship, resulting in the school's first ever appearance in the NCAA tournament, where they went on to upset number 2 seed Missouri. Kyle O'Quinn was the standout that year, which resulted in him being selected 49th overall to the Orlando Magic in the 2012 NBA draft. Our guest will be named interim head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State University in April 2013. And in less than a year, the interim tag was making him the permanent head man, which remains his position today. His accolades are too great a number to name them all, but in 2019, he will be named MEAC Coach of the Year, and this past season, arguably the toughest of all as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Our guest will lead Norfolk State to another appearance in the NCAA tournament, where they earn an opening round victory against Appalachian State University. Welcome to the Urban Sports Team, Mr. Robert Jones. What's happening, brother?
Hey, how you doing, man? What's going on?
Good to have you.
Same here. Great to have you. Great to have you. I see that you're from New York. X is from New York. X is from Yonkers. When you heard the news that he passed, what came to your mind? If you were an X fan or whatnot?
I was a fan, and you know, I listened to a lot of his music. Obviously in college and things like that. Like my early years in college when he first came out. But it was a shock that he passed. You know. Just kind of like out the blue, it seemed like. I know he battled a lot of different things in his life, but this was just shocking. So, you don't want to see anybody die at 50 years old. Exactly. You know, dying at 50 years old, you still have a long life to live, you would think. So that was just probably the saddest part.
Like Will said, you know, trying to give individuals their flowers. So I want to be on a high note and on a positive note. What was like your favorite X song?
man, there's a lot of them, man. I mean, of course, Rough Riders Anthem. I mean, I actually like the remix probably better than the original, to be honest with you. So the remix was good, and then I like song you had with the locks and stuff and Mace that I probably can't say the name of it on air. Like you say, Blank done started something. You know, so that's
right. Ninjas done started something.
That was one of my favorite joints right there, because I mean that's when Mace and Jadakiss was you know it was hard then. So
yes sir.
You know, but yeah, he got so many. Blackout with Jay-Z was also a good one. So it's it's a lot of them.
So the coach. We're going to move on to basketball now, and we, again, moving towards a more positive note in the show. And your school, the school where you coach the men's basketball program, Norfolk State, you won a MEAC Conference Championship tournament, and you also, of course, went to the NCAA tournament, defeated Appalachian State. But we know this season was difficult as a result of this ongoing pandemic, as I mentioned when I introduced you. Just explain and describe a bit how difficult it was being able to navigate through this season and ultimately the NCAA tournament.
I mean, this season was a trying year. I mean, you know, living your life not the way you're supposed to live it. You know, I mean, you know, just, there's no social, real social interactions. You know, the kids have to sacrifice a lot. I mean, you know, you're worried about even being around your own family because, you know, I mean, you know, hey, you know, your family could catch it and then you spread it to the kids and then there's a shutdown and things like that. So everybody had to be very, very cautious about just handling this season. But then, you know, I think once you got on the basketball court, it was just basketball, really. The games, of course, were different. You know, no fans at most of the arenas we played in. Mm-hmm. And so that was definitely different. And just a whole different season. But, you know, for us, it just it paid off. And it was great at the end for us.
So, again, I mentioned that victory over Appalachian State. How did earning a victory in the NCAA tournament sort of distract your team from the ongoing pandemic?
I don't think it distracted them anything. I think people knew, you know, they know what's going on. But I think for us to accomplish what we accomplished during the pandemic, you know, really, really felt good to the guys. It was like now, it's like almost like you sacrificed so much and you finally got the big reward, you know, for it. You know, you had to sacrifice, you know, girlfriends, parties, stuff like that. You know, these kids are 18 to 23 years old, 24 years, you know, some 24 years old, but they have to sacrifice a lot. And that's tough for them, man. So just to see that all their sacrifice actually paid off, I think was a good thing.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We're chatting with Norfolk State men's basketball coach Robert Jones. So coach, okay, real quick.
Okay, right. Sorry.
Oh, my bad. One more thing. Compare this team to the 2012 tournament team.
Very similar, except for we didn't have a pro like Kyle Quinn. But I mean, we had a lot of depth on the 2012 team, and we had a tremendous amount of depth on this team. Probably, you know, a good thing for me, but a bad thing for them, honestly, because you know, I could really just kind of throw up every night who I wanted to play, and it probably would work because everybody was like really similar. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, guys couldn't play 30 minutes a game or, you know, stuff like that. It was like, you know, guys' minutes were probably a little lower than what it would have been if they were on another team. Mm-hmm. You know,
so coach, how dope is it, you know, because you're fairly young, how dope is it to be a young coach, a young black coach in a, you know, for a D1 program? I think that's dope, you know what I mean? Like, how is the, like, in terms of the journey to get there, like, how fulfilling is that?
I mean, it's very fulfilling. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, to be one of 357 in the world, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people talk about the U.S., mm-hmm. but it's really the world because that's what Division I basketball is played at, you know. And I mean, it, you know, so he was only played in the U.S., but it's really the world, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's like winning the lottery every day. You know, of that, because everybody still talk about the, you know, talk about the NBA and things like that, mm-hmm. because there's so many players that play in the basketball in the world. There's only, you know, 400 or something NBA players or whatever it might be at this point. It's almost the same thing with coaches, man. You would go to a youth tournament on a weekend and you'll see 50 to 100 coaches just coaching youth basketball. Mm. So you multiply that all across the country, all across the state, all across the world, and then you add in college assistant coaches, high school coaches, you know, everything you add in. There's a lot of coaches that coach basketball. So to be one of 357 is a you know, a tremendous honor, and you know, it's something that you've got to stay humbled by, and then also there's a great responsibility, I think, too, because you are part of the elite, you know, an elite group, mm-hmm. and I think you should, you know, you should understand that and treat the job as such. And I try to do that every day that I can do it, you know, and understand that, you know, it is very elite company. And then, like, you know, like you said, coming from some of the things I came through to get this as the reward is just, you know, tremendous.
Yeah, and being successful. I mean, you got to add that too. Like, you've been successful. Like, not everybody gets to the big dance. You got to the tournament. People dream of getting the tournament. Like, I ain't play college ball, but I wish I was in the tournament. You know what I'm saying? So just to get, it's real talk, bro. Like, it's to get to the tournament. To me, it shows like your work. You know what I mean? Like Ray mentioned, you've done it before. You've upset a team. You was on the staff that upset the team at the Missouri, a big school. You got this team to the tournament this year and won to get to the round of 64. So you're not just in the dance; you're successful too. I think that's dope, all the way around, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. You know, it's a lot of hard work, a lot of unseen hours. I know that term is something I'm throwing around, you know, these days and stuff. But it is a lot of unseen hours that people, you know, people just think that you come to the games and, you know, you just show up and you, you know, you play, whether you play on TV or you, you know, up until this year, you know, you put on your nice suit and you just go out there and coach, you know, but they don't understand that you have to deal with kids' mental, you know, ups and downs. So you become a coach, a psychologist, a big brother, a father, you know, you become all of that stuff in the course of a year. And then with ups and downs, you know, you try not to, you know, obviously you try not to lose that much. And I've been fortunate enough not to lose a lot, but it's like, you know, there is losing streaks. Mm-hmm. So that those are the lows, and then there's winning streaks. Those are the highs. So you go through highs and lows in a season and, you know, just try to get that one ultimate goal of a championship.
And so, and then I have a follow up question to that. So since you, you know, you've won a game in the tournament, looks like your program is doing well. What do you hope gain from winning that game in the tournament in terms of recruiting or whatnot?
Just to keep enhancing our recruiting. I mean, you know, we kind of jumped on the national stage back in 2012. We beat Missouri, so that kind of stamped us a little bit. That kind of made recruiting a lot easier. It also helped when Kyle Quinn got drafted to the NBA. So now people see Norfolk State as a, you know, that well, they don't think that you're just selling them a dream that, hey, you could get drafted from here. It's been proven that you can get drafted from here. And then, you know, us beating, jumping back on the national scene a little bit in 2019 when we beat Alabama in our NIT first round, and you know, then jumping back on the biggest stage, you know, in the NCAA tournament, and then winning that game against Appalachian. And although we lost against Gonzaga, you know, 7 million people saw Norfolk State play Appalachian State, and 10 million people saw us play Gonzaga.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's like it just puts your program in the forefront. Of course, there's a financial reward for the school and things like that. So, you know, everybody's happy at the end of the day, and we're just trying to capitalize on our momentum.
So, Coach, this past weekend, there was a special that aired on ESPN. It was called HBCU Football, Our Time. Prior to that, I'm sure you're familiar with CP3 and Stephen A. doing a docuseries focusing on Central. You had the NBA All-Star tribute. HBCUs are starting to gain momentum. Sorry, Will, for the word, but it's the truth. So, you know, what is it going to take to continue this, like I said, momentum and getting HBCU and HBCU athletics, not just the athletics, the school as well, you know, in terms of education, what is it going to take to get back to a place where we're mentioned amongst the prominent, you know, schools and universities? I'm saying we, because we all on this show attended HBCUs as well.
It's just going to continue to take people's belief in HBCUs that you can do anything you want to do from HBCU. If you want to be a doctor, you can be a doctor. You know, if you want to be an NBA player, you can be it. If you want to be a surgeon, you know, whatever you want to do, you can do it from HBCU. So it just has to, you know, take that, just that belief. I think a lot of times, even as African-American people, you know, sometimes the problem we have is that, like, sometimes parents of a recruit have went to an HBCU, and then when we recruit them, they want to send them somewhere else. Well, we're like, well, if you were successful going to HBCU, then why won't you send your kid to HBCU? You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you run into that. It's like almost like, you know, it's really like our race and our culture that kind of, like, you know, turn your back on each other. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, sometimes other people don't do that, you know? So we got to understand that and give full faith and into the HBCUs and things like that, including athletics, because a lot of these athletes, man, you know, if Zion Williamson would have came to Norfolk State, he was still going to be the number one pick. You know, he was the best player in the world at that time. You know, if you know, some of these other kids would have came to Norfolk State, they'd still have been number one. LeBron would have came to Norfolk State back then. He was still going number one. You know, like it's not going to hurt anything, but it will help tremendously the colleges and universities from a, you know, financial standpoint, marketing standpoint, and everything like that. Because honestly, the reason why some of our kids go to like a Duke or North Carolina, and Coach K and obviously, you know, Roy Williams, who just retired, ran great programs. But be honest with you, man, I never even heard of Duke until I seen him on TV, you know, playing basketball. So, and I know Duke is a good university, you know, but it's going to take more exposure. Like if we had the top five players in the country at Norfolk State, and Norfolk State is on TV all the time on ESPN and stuff like that, then people going to associate just going to Norfolk State. You know, there's people I know that went to Carolina, non-basketball players. One of my good friends was a dentist, went to Carolina as a non, you know, he didn't play basketball or whatever, but It's like he went there because the basketball program was so good. You know what I mean? Like, and it just happened. It just happened to be that the dental program was okay too. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's gonna take stuff like that. It's gonna take us to believe in us to make it happen.
Yes, sir.
And I think that, you know, us, you know, Norfolk State, you know, especially the basketball program, myself and my coaches and things like that, we're gonna try to run the program just like any other program in the country with the resources that we have, you know, and we have more resources than people think. People think that we, you know, eating McDonald's and stuff like that. We don't eat McDonald's, man. You know, we don't do stuff like that. So it's like, you know, it's crazy, the perception. Mm-hmm. But that's why when we on the national stage and we play against Appalachian State, who had a basketball budget almost three times as much as ours, we want to show them that, yo, we're gonna be up 19 points against this team because we're going to run a program the way this, you know, because we just a regular program, man. Like, it's not about HBCU and stuff like that. It's like, man, we just a good mid-major basketball program at this point. We beyond that other stuff at this point.
Mm-hmm. Coach, this is Will. First of all, I want to congratulate you on all the success you had this year, even though I am a Morgan State graduate and you broke my heart in the MEAC championship. Your team broke my heart in the MEAC conference tournament. But outside of that.
I'm sorry about that, man.
Hey, it's all good, man. It's all good. You mentioned Gonzaga, and you guys played Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament. Would you look at a program like Gonzaga, what they built themselves up to over like a 15-year span, as kind of like the blueprint for what you're trying to do at Norfolk State and for what other smaller Division I colleges are trying to do with their basketball program?
Without question. I mean, we are going to say that we want to be the Gonzaga of the East, and I know other programs use that too, but what we say is that a lot of times the MEAC is an underrated conference because people don't know who's in the MEAC, or they don't respect the brand of basketball, whatever it might be. But I tell people, on the flip side, you name me five teams in Gonzaga's conference, I'll wait. You know, like, you don't know where they play out there.
So it's like, that's true.
It's like, you know, you want to be, you know, like, if they can do it, you know, we can figure out, like, okay, you might say the MEAC is weak outside of, you know, maybe a couple teams. All right, fine, whatever you want to say. But we're not going to allow you to say Norfolk State is weak. You know, like, we're gonna put a product out there that's going to be a very good product. Just like Gonzaga, you know, they play against, I don't know who's over there. I guess Pacific and, you know, Mount St. Mary's, I guess, is over there too. Yeah. In that conference, there's a whole bunch of Pepperdine and stuff like that. It's like, they beat up on those guys, but, you know, they still like a national power at the end of the day. So that's how we want to be eventually. But it's going to take more than just this year and more than just 2012. It's going to take the whole machine behind the program. It's going to take more people to believe in the program and help increase, you know, the revenue to the program.
No, I agree. I think that it definitely can happen. Gonzaga is a good example. You got Gonzaga, Butler. You got teams that have moved out of their conferences, but they start off as a small mid-major or mid-major. Now they're playing in, you know, supposedly big conferences. So I think it's definitely possible, especially with, you know, within the historic, in terms, and Ray's always talked about it too, the historic nature of the MEAC. There were so many talented ballers coming out of the MEAC back in the day. So I feel like there's definitely an opportunity. And with all this, you know, I call it the being woke movement and whatnot, you got kids who are now looking into, you know, saying, you know what, I want to represent my community, my culture. And I'm with you, Coach. It's like, yeah, it does come from the parents too. They have to instill it to the kids and say, you know what, yo, I graduated from an HBCU, you know what I mean, and I turned out fine. You can go out there and do the darn thing too. And to another point, you mentioned some of these great ballers that we see in the league, in the NBA. You're right. Like, a LeBron James wanted to go to a MEAC or any other HBCU school, you know, he still would be the first best player coming out in the draft. It wouldn't hinder him. You know what I mean? What it would do is it would uplift that school's image, because they would be on TV more, like you stated, they would be on TV more and they would get more exposure. But now you see LeBron on, you know, playing on that team, it makes you say, you know what, I want to go to that team. Like, growing up, I mean, Michigan was a good basketball team. It was a big program. But when the Fab Five came out, Everybody wanted to go to Michigan. Everybody wanted to be Jalen Rose. Everybody wanted to be Chris Paul Howard.
And you didn't know anything about University of Michigan. Nah. You just said they look pretty cool.
Yeah.
On TV.
Mm-hmm. So
you know anything about them? Yeah.
So I agree.
Coach, I got to give some love too to Georgetown. Georgetown is another program right here in the nation's capital. Mm-hmm. Coach Thompson was a trailblazer, and of course, who heard of Georgetown before that in terms of basketball? Nobody.
Man, I thought so, black school,
everything
bro.
You're saying is correct, and I understand that. I'm just saying, but look at Georgetown's whole team. What color were they? You know what? Who was represented on the court?
Yeah,
that's my point. But speaking of a district, this is where obviously we're based, our show. In terms of recruiting, how's recruiting going? And do you recruit in this area that we call the DMV?
Yeah, I mean, we recruit everywhere, you know, wherever you can play. And, you know, like, wherever you can play, we're going to try to recruit you. So, yeah, we do recruit in that area. Of course, we recruit in Virginia, you know, and we have had some Maryland kids and things like that. So, we'll recruit everywhere. But recruiting is going pretty good, though. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of interest from the NCAA tournament, you know, win, because, like I said, a lot of people saw that win. So, you know, you got to strike kind of while the iron is hot to really keep the program going. So I think we're involved in, I should say, involved with some kids that we might not have been involved with without the NCAA tournament, you know. So with that being said, we got to kind of close the deal on some of these kids so now we can do it again next year, you know, because I think the one thing is that once you get a taste of that, man, it's like, there's nothing like it in sports, you know. Even with the pandemic, it's still nothing like it, you know. You want to keep tasting that over and over and over, man. So, you know, we just got to try to do what we got to do to make that happen.
All right, hey coach, I got a friend who actually I told him that you were coming on. He coaches an AAU squad takeover in DC takeover AAU squad. He said he got a couple kids for you. If you need to take a look at.
All right, tell him, send them.
All right. No, but yeah, Coach, we appreciate you being on. Before we let you go, is there anything you would like to add?
No, I mean, you guys, you know, covered it with some good questions, man. So, no, to add. Except for if you're a good basketball player, come to Norfolk State.
I love about it. Really. you got any social media?
Always be selling.
You know, is there any social media you want to plug then? You know what I mean? Like, so these kids can know?
Yeah, I mean, Twitter is NSU Coach Jones. My Instagram is NSU Coach Jones. So everything is pretty consistent with that. NSU Coach Jones. So, you know, anybody want to follow or whatever and follow the journey of Norfolk State basketball, I post a lot about Norfolk State basketball.
Awesome.
I try not to be one of those coaches that post too much about myself because I think that's like, you know, self-centered a little bit. But, you know, because there are some coaches out there that post a lot about themselves and not really about the program. So. If you want to see something about Norfolk State basketball and a little bit about me, then come check out. I felt like Suge Knight back in the day. Like if you don't see the dancer in the videos, then come over here. You know, so you guys are watching your coach post about themselves and you know all the time, and it's all about them. To come over to Norfolk State.
And not the source.
Yeah.
Oh,
all right, you made the transition nicely from Queens to the country.
Oh man.
Yeah, man, for sure, man.
All right, thanks for being on, man. Appreciate you.
No doubt.
Appreciate you, coach.
All right, man.
Love you, man.
Continue success.
Definitely. Again, that's
that was dope.
That was, man. Again, that's Norfolk State's men's basketball coach, Coach Robert Jones, man. Dope. He's dope, man. I love him. I love it. And I love that he's like our age. You know what I'm saying? That's what I love about it. He's like our age. He's in our demographic.
Oh, okay, Will. So Will, you were the first one. Will, you were the first one to drop your alma mater. You know, me and Wally went to the same school. My man Robert Jones represents Norfolk State. Who's gonna blow up first? Because it's coming. And Morgan is closer than my school. Unfortunately, my school didn't even play any sport this year, except for bowling, I think. And we're the best in that.
You're
represent
the best.
UMES. But you got Brodus there. Coach Jones is young. I believe that they have momentum in terms of recruiting. Again, Will, sorry for the word. Who's going to blow up first in the MEAC or just, you know, in general for HBCU?
Of course I'm biased, so I'm going to say Morgan State.
Okay.
But not to take anything away from what Coach Brodus is building at Morgan, because I think he's doing a phenomenal job. But when you do have the success, you know, essentially winning a game in the NCAA tournament, like Coach Robert Jones at Norfolk State had, that does give you a bit of a head start.
Most definitely.
So, you know, you got to think about it. You know, COVID, a lot of people will probably watch the NCAA tournament. You know, it gives them the visibility that any coach would want to, you know, when you're starting to build, take your program to that next rung. But, you know, anyone who watched that MEAC championship game knows that Coach Brodus and Morgan State, they played Norfolk State very tough. So.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, my UMBS doesn't have that in the future anytime soon right now. Not that I know of. We don't have that in the cards. But hopefully we'll have a tournament.
Hopefully, this is what we got the platform. You can get the UMBS coach on. And
I'm coming.
There you go.
I'm hoping for it, man. I want to go to a game and just rock the colors, man. You know what I'm saying? The Hawk and everything.
You want to go down there for homecoming?
Nah, I don't do that no more.
All right. Let's go, baby. The culture. I love it.
You know what I'm saying?
Think about it. Homecoming, the urban sports scene broadcasting live during UMES homecoming. Come on, man. That'd be big.
Yeah, that would be dope, man. That would be okay. I would like that. That sounds cool. But you said the homecoming. Going to homecoming like I'm going to homecoming. Like, nah, that's not happening.
You would. Don't lie to the people.
Not anymore. Not anymore, bro.
He's gonna have his throwback jersey.
I hate you, man. Hey, Will, go ahead, man. Will, it's on you, Will. I'm done with
you. reports out that the Washington football team is in love with draft prospect Trey Lance. We'll discuss this after the break. It's the Urban Sports Team.
Empire Media. Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, Ray Jeezy and myself, Wole, part of Empire Media.
All right, welcome back, everyone. NFL analyst Michael Lombardi reported that the Washington football team loved North Dakota State quarterback Trey Lance. Should Washington trade up to secure Lance? Ray, I'll start with you.
I listened to you guys last week. You know, I do listen when I'm not on. I will admit that I was out of town, but I still took a little time to log on and listen to the Urban Sports Scene for a bit. And I also remember when Lou Holder appeared on our show weeks ago, and I'm hearing many of the fans as well who are all stating that this organization hasn't had a franchise quarterback, and they basically, quote unquote, need one. I understand, you know, it's nice to have stability and arguably the most important position on the team. However, and it's a big however for me, this franchise won 3 Super Bowls without a franchise quarterback. And based on last season, this team is clearly a defensive football team. So I'm thinking you just keep building. You do not give up assets, because if people can't score against you, or people struggle to score against you, then you always will have a shot to win. Do you want to have Phillip Rivers? Do you want to have Dan Marino or McNabb, these franchise quarterbacks who didn't win Super Bowls? Even some of the great, like Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, they've only won one. So if your aim is to win a championship, I don't know, we need to focus too much on a quarterback. And is it worth trading up for Trey Lance if you're building differently where your defense and your running game is the primary key to winning? That's my question.
Yeah, I don't go Will.
No, go ahead, Will.
No, I don't think that to Ray's point, like Ray talked, he talks about this, you know, sustainable success, right? That's Ray's little thing, sustainable success. And I don't see like trading up to get, you know, and I like Trey Lance. I've said this before. I think Trey Lance arguably could be the second or third best quarterback in this draft. But I don't look at it as a situation where you have to trade up to get him, because I don't think he's a day one starter anyway. So I think when we talk about trading up to play to pick a guy, and we're talking, some of the reports are that they're willing to trade up to get to the top, you know, in the top 10 or whatnot or whatever. I don't think you take that risk, you know, especially if you're a team that still needs a lot of help to be where you want to get at. They're not a Trey Lance away from being a dominant football team. And I know a lot of people look at Patrick Mahomes and that type of arm, but you still have to look at the Kansas City Chiefs had a very good ball club, you know, prior to Patrick Mahomes starting, and all they did was add that individual into the starting lineup, and you know, they were a Super Bowl contending football team. This Washington football team doesn't have the weapons of a Kansas City Chiefs team or some other quarterbacks that has been blessed with a situation. They're still adding pieces, so you know, just continue to add pieces in the draft. Now if he falls to them, they're blessed, and you take a Trey Lance, or if it's a situation where maybe he's 2 draft picks away, and I don't see that happening, but say that's the situation, and maybe you can consider doing that. But if you're talking about something drastic, then I would say no.
I agree with both of you guys. With regards to trading up and giving away anything significant, and significant meaning a future first or second round pick, I absolutely would be against it. I don't think that's something you do. You currently have a team that is strong on the defensive side. And again, I'll say this again. I think that Washington has a future star in Antonio Gibson in the backfield. You don't need to trade up to get a quarterback. I'm a fan of, you know, if there's a quarterback that falls to you and that highly rated in the second or third round, you go there, you draft him. Then you let him sit behind Ryan Fitzpatrick. And if he's ready next year, then you trot him out there. And then you know what you do 2 years from now? If that guy doesn't evolve to being someone you think could be a franchise quarterback, i.e. meaning the guy, you draft another quarterback. I'm a big fan of drafting quarterbacks until you get it right. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in the first round, but maybe in the second or third round. Every 2 or 3 years, because if you think about the length of these guys' contracts, mm-hmm. I think a second or third rounder is like 4 years, mm-hmm. a four-year contract, and then also with the rookie pay scale where they're slotted at, you can consistently draft quarterbacks until you get it right, until you find a guy, without giving up so much draft capital. To extend and get a guy that you don't, if you aren't 100% sure he's the guy for you.
Yeah, and I think that Coach Rivera pretty much stated it, I want to say a couple weeks ago, that if you know, they don't have to draft a quarterback. I know we've been so entrenched in this culture that you got to continue to draft a quarterback in the first round. You just build your team, and then you get a guy that you actually like. A lot of teams, what they do is just because someone says they need it, because it's stated that they need a quarterback, they'll reach on a guy in a particular draft who may not be, they may see that, you know, has potential, but isn't really there yet. You know, to me, you draft a guy that you're in love with. You draft a guy that you like, especially in the first round. We're talking about in the first round, you draft a guy that you like. I mean, like you really like, not a guy that, you know what, we need a quarterback. He's there. Let's draft him. Like, you don't do that. You got to, you do your homework and you pick a guy that you like. And even in the second round, a guy that you like, because it gets to a point where you're just drafting quarterbacks just to draft quarterbacks. And I get what you're saying, Will. If they like the guy, if they're doing their draft board and they like the guy, and this guy, you know what, we have a high grade on him, let's take him. But there's situations where we've seen it in the NFL where people just draft quarterbacks because, you know what, they're like, we need a quarterback. This may not be the draft in terms of having the guys at quarterback to be very successful, but we need a quarterback in this draft class. We need a quarterback, period, anyway. So we'll just draft in this draft class, knowing that maybe we're in 2021, 2022 may have a better quarterback draft class. And you already know that. You already know that. But you know what? Your mind is saying, hey, we need a quarterback. Let's just draft a quarterback just to draft a quarterback. So I like where Coach Rivera is going with it. He's like, you know what? If we get the opportunity to get a guy that we like at quarterback, we'll take him. If not, then we're cool with waiting it out and maybe waiting it out for next season and seeing, like, hey, maybe we'll get a quarterback. We'll have our guy in that draft class, because you got the kid from Oklahoma, Rattler, who could be. I mean, if Washington, depending on how they slide or whatnot, that's a guy that they have the ability to maybe get. You know what I mean? And that dude is talented enough to be a franchise quarterback. So it depends, man. It really does. It depends if Coach Rivera really likes.
Well, just to piggyback off of what we've been discussing. Mel Kiper put out his mock draft 4.0 mm-hmm. earlier today, I believe. He has Trey Lance projected to go number six via a trade between Miami and Atlanta, with the Falcons selecting him at number six. And he has the latest quarterback being drafted in the first round is number 10 overall, and that's Justin Fields with New England trading with Dallas.
They said, so he has, well, that's deep. I think Bucky for NFL Network. I could be wrong. I think he has
Bucky Brooks.
I think he has Washington getting trading up to 10 and getting Trey. So he has Atlanta getting, he has Atlanta getting Trey Lance?
Yes, he has Atlanta trading with the Dolphins. Yep, Atlanta trading with the Dolphins.
See, that's easy.
The Dolphins taking Kyle Pitts.
Mm-hmm.
And Atlanta taking Trey Lance.
Would you like Trey Lance?
So he has four quarterbacks going.
Three quarterbacks going in the top three, so.
Yeah, okay. I know there's a lot of quarterbacks going around. Ray, do you like Trey Lance? Would you take Trey Lance?
I mean, obviously, you know what I said recently ago. I'm not high on combines and tape. You know, mm-hmm. I have to actually see it. And I didn't watch Trey Lance games in college. I don't know if you guys did, but I didn't. So
no.
I would have to see him in action. I'm not going to just judge off of, you know, in shorts and a muscle shirt right now. Even though, does he look the part? Of course he does. But I'm very hesitant. Although he would not be in a situation where he would have to play right away, so it might be a good situation for him.
Yeah, I think so. He's a guy. I've watched clips of him. I mean, I like guys who can win in college. I mean, I'm a big believer in that. You know, a lot of people fixated with the kid that played for BYU, and I've seen him against certain competition, and he didn't, you know, show out. But I like that. You know, this kid's almost like, it's almost comparable to what we saw. His track record is to Carson Wentz in terms of him winning football games. So, I mean, I like that aspect of him. I don't look at him as a day one starter. I definitely don't see that. I see him as a guy that I think Atlanta would be a good situation for him because he would be sitting behind Matt Ryan, and you can learn from Matt Ryan. So I think that would be dope.
The thing is with, I mean, just drafting in general, none of, you know, these so-called experts want to say that they know who's going to do what and who, you know, who's going to shake out to be, you know, an elite player. The reality is it's a gamble. No one knows.
Facts.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that was the case, Chicago Bears wouldn't have taken Mitchell Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. So
just to remind you guys and the listeners, the goal, as Wole said, is not just sustainable success, but it's a Super Bowl. And the last time we had a champion in the DC area was the Washington Nationals, who haven't started the season strong. We'll talk Washington Nationals baseball when we come back. You listen to Urban Sports Scene on Empire Media.
Told you I got you. Make your ass scoop you when them baggy niggas shot you. I'ma hold you down. I mean that for real.
But every time you beef with a nigga, I end up having to kill.
Ain't like that. Some hey, forget about them two kids. About to get a deal. It's as nice as you is.
Oh, you think?
Nah, I'm just playing. What's up? Got some new bitches. Know you trying to fuck.
Not really.
What? Ain't your man no more? It's because the nigga don't need a hand no more. You know how we do. If one don't score. We all take the pussy and go up in the roar.
It's like now, where you going? I ain't trying to take it. Fucking with a nigga like you, I won't make it.
It'll be what it is.
Yo, you in for the night? I'm about to take it to the crib.
You get home, mine.
The snake, the rat, the cat, damn you, dog. How you gonna live when you're ill, you get fall?
With this nigga no more. Word to my mother, fuck it, so you know I'm for sure. Word to my brother, it's like he's gotten worse than before. So now I wonder what type of dirt this nigga got in store for me to get under. Then I get the call. Yo,
X, police just killed your cousin. I live in the projects. Don't get back, niggas who pay. Him, I got you. Told you I got you. Yo,
I got you. I'm in the catch 22, cause them niggas got to pay. But I know he gonna be asking for a favor one day. But fuck it, I ain't got no choice in the matter. The fact I killed my people, and I wanna see him splatter.
That's what I'm talking about. We ain't on no pitch yet. And I'ma use the same gun that you killed them two kids with. Is that hard to live with?
Nah.
So you still a player?
But what you want from me?
I'll tell you later.
The snake, the rats, the cat, and the dog. How you gonna live when you're ill, you get fall?
Shit is all over the news. Bomb goes off at Central. What the fuck have I gotten myself into? The mental is like, get the fuck out of there. I'm out.
Hey, going somewhere?
Nah.
What you bag for?
Fuck it. What you want?
And your nigga coming tight?
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, and Ray Jeezy, part of Empire Media. All right, the Nets has started the season a little slow. They're 2-5. I think they're playing a little bit better. What has caused the Nets struggle?
A couple of things. Lack of consistent hitting throughout the lineup. Not having, you know, two of your higher profile offseason acquisitions in Kyle Schwarber and Josh Bell. That's pretty much it. And then, as far as I'm concerned, then also Max Scherzer giving up a lot of early home runs.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now the Nets are and the St. Louis Cardinals are tied 1-1. Steven Strasburg is in the hill. Come on, Strasburg. Went out, man. I got you on my fantasy baseball team. It's all about that bag. I'm asking
you play fantasy baseball?
Yeah, I'm in a fantasy baseball money league. I was asked Talk Nats asked me if I wanted to be in in the fantasy baseball league. I said sure, why not? And they asked me like
you
some money.
Sucker coming.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, I'm won my first. I won week one, bro. Come on now. Look, man, I'm a baseball connoisseur,
okay,
bro.
All right, okay.
I'm a baseball connoisseur.
So you please let us and let the listeners know. You know, give us an update.
Oh yeah,
you know, how
I
you
will.
Doing?
I will, man. Right now, you know, I got a nice chill squad, man. I got Steven Strasburg. You know, I got some Orioles that like that new that would probably do well. I got Manny Machado. I got a nice squad. You know, low key. Kind of chill, jai chill. But I think for the Nats, man, I think the Nats, their situation is one, like you mentioned, Will, like COVID kind of messed up their whole lineup, offensively speaking, missing some of the bats. But also just for the guys that were actually on the field, like situational hitting wasn't the best. You know, obviously when you're trying to drive in runs, you need to do that. I know for a while they weren't scoring runs at all. So the offense hasn't been, you know, clicking, though. I will say, though, Bell is back. Ryan Zimmerman was hitting well. So you had individuals stepping up, but as a team, so in terms of a collective unit, situational hitting, moving guys over, things of that sort, bring guys in, they weren't playing strong baseball. I think now when you get some guys, like you mentioned, Will, you get some guys back, you just feel a little, you know, feel an air of confidence. You saw that with Schwarber. I think he had a couple runs batted in yesterday. You got Bell, who had a key at bat, getting a walk that led to that inning for them to get the lead against the Cards yesterday. So better pitching from Eric Fetty yesterday as well. So this team is it's right now. I feel like, you know, you can't win a season or win a championship in April, right? We learned that about this ball club, you know, when they won the championship. It's about how you round this thing out. I'm a firm believer when I watch this lineup that this lineup is potent. I don't care if it's struggling now. When I watch it and look at it and look at the capability that this lineup has, they can be a dynamic offense. It's predicated on one thing, though, to be honest with you. If Victor Robles puts everything together, this team, to me, would be the favorite to win to get out of the NL. And this is with the Dodgers or whatever. It's all predicated on what he can do. Because you lost Anthony Rendon, who's one of the best players, period, in baseball. But you have a guy in Robles who's going to hit leadoff, who's going to give you the opportunity to do special things, because he's a guy who has some pop, who has speed, plays. He's a gold glove caliber center fielder. But he has to bring it all together. Like, you can't have games where I saw yesterday, even though they won, where this team needs him to step up and he's striking out. You can't have that right now. You've been here on this team long enough where, you know, this team now relies on you to be a big bat. They don't have Rendon anymore. You know what I'm saying? Soto can't carry it all by himself. As great as he is, people will walk you when you're that great. So players like, you know, I think Victor Robles is the key for this team to get to where they want to be at.
So guys, I want to ask you something, because we've all experienced significant injuries. And in this case with the Washington Nationals, like you both just mentioned, we're not talking about injuries. We're talking about a worldwide pandemic that clearly impacted them greatly to start the season. Davey Martinez said he still wants to get John Lester back before he feels like the Nationals' COVID-19 outbreak is officially behind them. So it goes to show you that the mental aspect is still there. And I think that's the one thing that's going to really mess with them and hold them back until they get past this mental component. That's when I feel like their bats will really let loose. They'll play more free. How long do you think it's going to take before, you know, you're able to move past that, where the team just got vaccinated, from what I read? You obviously are traveling with a mask on. How long would that take? And do you tap into other athletes who have been navigating this pandemic, like the NBA, the NHL? You kind of dealt with it last year, but now you're talking about fans being back. You're talking about your team being, you know, greatly impacted. You know, how long is that going to take? And will that, you know, mess them up to where they may not be able to recover?
Well, luckily it's a 162 game season.
Right.
I think they'll have an opportunity to catch up. I mean, you're right though. It's all about rhythm. Like watching Bell yesterday, I knew that he didn't have his rhythm at the plate, you know, cause he missed. I think he had a key bat. I wanted to say the bases were loaded. I could be wrong, but he had a situation 3-1 when the pitcher, all he can throw him was a fastball. Like, all he can throw him was a fastball, dead center cut. And he whiffed at it. And if you know anything about Bell, like, that's a pitch he can crush easily. And he missed a couple of them to strike out, and got the same fastball twice. So it's all about timing. No, so they're going to, some guys who are going to be missing games are going to have to get their timing back. And I think that, to your point, Ray, that will hinder this ball club. But a lot of teams will be dealing with this, to be honest, to be real with you. A lot of teams will be dealing with it. You know, to me, the Nats won't be the only team this season, but I do think the Nats do have the capability to win with it, to win even though they get hit with it. Because at the end of the day, you win baseball games predominantly on playing good defense and pitching. And the Nats, because of the acquisitions they've made, they will play. They should be able to play solid defense, and they have the pitchers to do what they need to do. You mentioned John Lester. I think once he gets healthy, that's going to make their rotation 10 times better. You got a guy, Eric Fetty, who can hold you down as a fifth starter until Lester gets back. You saw what Ross can do, you know what I mean, when he's healthy. You got a Joe Ross who, to me, has a bunch of potential. Corbin got rocked in his first start, but you don't expect him to be, you know, to be you expect him to be that guy when he gets his game rolling and whatnot. Strasburg right now got hit with a homer by Nolan Arenado, and now the Nats are down 3-1. But you expect Strasburg and Scherzer to still be top of the line starters. So I just feel like the Nats, even though, right, they're struggling, they still have, and even with COVID being a part of baseball, they still have enough to still win, even with COVID. Will T.
So I'm asking you guys a question. Is it too early for Nats fans to begin to panic?
Yeah, I think it is. Will, you think it's too early? You a big Nats fan, man. You think it's too early, bro? Where Will at, man? Will at this, man?
Will watching the game, and he's
sitting upset. I'm sitting here talking. You know what's crazy? I'm sitting here talking, and I'm on mute.
That's what I thought was happening, because I was like, yo, this, like, Will was letting me talk like, way too at, much man? About the Nats, yeah. Dog. Like, I'm going.
Exactly.
I was like, why am I talking so heavily about the Nats? Where's Will at to interject?
No, I do. That's a great question. I'm kind of worrying from the perspective of, this is a little bit older of a team. Mm. As we start getting into the dog days of summer, we all know that injuries start to happen. And plus the level of competition in the NL East, you know, you have Atlanta, Philly, and then you also have the Mets, and Florida is no slouch.
Yeah.
The Miami Marlins are no slouch. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to get a little antsy. But I'm trying to remain positive.
So on Twitter, my man Christopher tweeted us. He said, not time to panic yet. This team had a slow start in 2019 when they won the World Series. They had a slow start in 2020, and we're coming on late in the year, except it was a short season. Now we're getting players back off the COVID list, and they're looking better. Too early to panic. I agree. I think it's too early to panic, but I think, Will, you have a great point, man. You got older players, and like you said, like, this is a long baseball season, so who knows if they're going to have the energy to kind of flip the script like we saw a couple years ago. So, no, I get
yeah,
you.
And then also, the NL East wasn't as deep mm-hmm. when the Nats won the pennant. Compared to this year, right? When they won it in 2019, the NL East wasn't as good from top to bottom. This year, from top to bottom, is really no slouch, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I think the NL East is definitely a hard division. You know, the Atlanta Braves haven't started the season strong, but I'm with you. Like, the talent is there. Like, Atlanta is a superpower. The Mets are a better team, a healthier. The Phillies, I mean, they should be a good team, but they should have been a good team last year and the year before last. And the Marlins, to me, is a team that just works hard, and they're a bunch of young dudes who don't know that they're not supposed to compete, but they compete. So I'm with you. I think the NL East is definitely a challenging division, even for the Washington Nationals. But subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And check out the new home of the Urban Sports Scene, Empire Media, at empiremedia.com. Before we check out the show again, I want to say, for folks who don't know, we weren't in the time of where we were listening to music in our, when we were, 99, 2000, DMX was, and you've heard of him throughout the show in terms of our breaks and whatnot, DMX was one of the, at that particular point in time, may have arguably been the best rapper in the game, and his music was iconic for that run that he did have when he was the top of his game, when he was focused on music or whatnot. That man was a musical genius. His music is timeless. Like Will T said, it's all about celebrating this individual, because at the end of the day, when you look back and you listen to that stuff, you can probably remember where you were at or when you copped that album or whatever, because that music was insightful, was passionate, and it wasn't just generic music. It was music for the soul. So, again, RIP DMX, appreciate the music you brought to the game. Appreciate the history you brought to many folks around here, many listeners. We just appreciate you so much, man. So live up there. I mean, rest easy and rest in heaven, my man. Anything else anybody want to say before I close the show out officially?
No, not really. I'm not gonna say my comment.
Ray, anything you want to say?
No, that's real talk.
Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, X, lead us out, big homie.
I thank you, Lord, for my birth and everything that's followed. I thank you, Lord, for today, and I will pray for tomorrow. I thank you, Lord, for the love of my life and a friend. I made a promise, and I'm loving my wife to the end. I thank you, Lord, for your guidance, because it's all that counts. And right here, right now, Lord, this is your house. I thank you, Lord, for a dream that came true to light. And I ask you to bless everybody in this room tonight. I don't always do the right thing, and I ask you to forgive me. I need you here with me. Without you in my life, it's empty. I think back how some people did me like violence was the remedy. And because I think of that now, I pray for my enemy. Not because of what I'll do, but because they don't know. There's something better after here, but everybody won't go. So I ask you to forgive them, and we'll hope they see. And I thank you for the love that they've given to me. I will not abuse it, nor will I lead them astray. You see, I love them like children that I see every day. And I pray, no, we pray together. Get us through the bad weather, and we love you forever. Let your thought and my heart go hand in hand. I first thought, but to start. But I stand a man. And for as long as I can, as long as you permit me, please give me the strength I need to live. Bear with me. Amen.